O'Brien. And Taylor, and Davis is there as he has been when he's needed to be.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Hello.
Hello, Richard.
How are we?
Very well, thank you. Looking forward to this one. We're back, of course. New year, new start for the Goalkeepers Union. And looking forward to this particular interview. Good friend of yours.
He is indeed. Now, someone that I've worked closely with for a number of years now. And someone who's done exceptionally well. Had some highs and lows, certainly. And it's an interview that I'm going to be fascinated to hear.
Lovely stuff. Well, this week's guest is a goalkeeper who started his career with Everton. He moved on to Sheffield Wednesday, spent a long time with Barnsley and currently resides at Stoke City. He's bagged two promotions and an EFL trophy. Also, he has represented his country, Wales, at international level. Adam Davies, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello, how are we?
Yeah, very good, thank you.
Thank you.
Great to have you. You all right, Rich? Yeah, good?
Yeah, no, yeah. Good. I'm answering as well. He wasn't just asking you.
It's great to have you on the show, mate. We always like to start with something a little bit different. And with you, you probably know what's coming. I've got three words. Laser eye surgery. Just unbelievable scenes.
Yeah, I wanted it done for a long time. Obviously wore contacts all my career. And then I did inquire at one place, but they were like, oh, we've got to wait a couple of months and this and that. And I was like, I kind of need it doing straight away. As soon as the season finishes, I want it doing. So I went to another place and they could book me in a week after the season finished. So I just bit the bullet and done it. And it was probably the best thing I've ever done, really. You know, at night time, especially with the games, with the lights and stuff, the contacts, sometimes they dry up and you'd see like little black dots and stuff like that. So ever since I've had the laser eye surgery, touch wood, my eyes have been good. So yeah, it was the best thing I ever did.
I was going to ask you that because that's the thing that, and I suppose a lot of people listening, obviously goalkeepers listening, might appreciate this a little bit more, but when you're playing at night, and especially when you've got the lights that are along the edge of the stadium roof, for instance, and every time you look up, every time there's a cross that comes in, it has to go through the lights. Have you noticed a difference pre-surgery to where you are now?
Yeah, it's still bad sometimes at night. Obviously, the lights kind of like literally the line of the ball is where the light is, and you kind of just have to catch the light. But I can definitely see a difference in those nighttime games. Everything just seems a little bit more clearer, and I can just see everything a little much. It's only fine details, but it makes such a difference in the game that we play.
Actually, do you know, there's something, and I've never brought this up on the podcast before, but I think it's a good opportunity to. So there was a product that came out, and it must have been about 15 years ago, where Nike brought out a contact lens, and they said it was HD for your eyes. So I got myself these contact lenses.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. Try something new. And I've seen Marcus Hanneman wear them in a game, and they look pretty cool as well. The problem was, it made me realise, like, depth perception is a little bit more difficult with contact lenses. Maybe I just never got used to them fully, but it did make me appreciate that it is a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, well, I had a little look, actually, if there was any better, like, contacts out there, like sports kind of contacts, and Nike was one that come up, but obviously I went ahead with the laser eye surgery instead, which was much better, I think.
Yeah, I think you made a good call because I think I wore them for one training session, had one of the worst training sessions of my life, and that was it. I threw them in the bin. Bloodshot eyes because I've never put contacts in before.
Big Nike tick blurring your vision.
When you're playing, you sometimes forget to blink because you're obviously so focused on the game and watching the ball and stuff. And that was the worst thing because when I didn't blink, that was when the contacts got really dry. So I had to sometimes remind myself, like, oh, blink, and then you might be able to see the ball a bit better.
Well, this is a first for sure on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, reminding yourself to blink. That's brilliant.
But it is. Do you know what makes a good point? You know what it's like? They talk about being in the zone, in the flow. Like, especially when the ball's in and around the box, it sounds ridiculous, but you can't afford to sometimes because stuff can happen. There you go. In the blink of an eye, it can. So you have to be so focused. I can imagine, especially, if you can't. What happens when your contacts will get dry then? You go to blink and you're just very aware. Is that what it is? You just get like almost, is it a pain or is it what then happens?
No, you can just feel it drying up a little bit and then like your vision just goes a little bit funny. But once you blink and obviously like lubricate them, they go back to normal. But like I say, like the laser eye surgery was unreal. Like, I obviously don't get that now. So, it was definitely the right thing to do. I needed it for my career.
Do you know, Adam, of any other goalkeeper that's done this? Do you know, Rich, of anybody that's done this before? Are you a pioneer in the case of laser eye surgery for goalkeepers?
I don't know any goalkeepers, but there's a lad who wears them at Stoke at the minute, and I've told him it's the best thing I ever did. Not a goalkeeper, he's an outfielder, but I said to him, get it done. Honestly, he will not regret it. So I don't know about goalkeepers, but I'm sure there must be a couple lads out there who've had it done.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we're obviously going to be talking about your career, but just to touch on when it was done, it was obviously after the season that Barnsley got relegated, and then of course last season you played captain, top of all the stats for League One, best goalkeeper in the league by a mile, and obviously this was after the surgery. Now, you can't obviously put it all down to the surgery, but then I guess part of it will come back to confidence, I would assume, yeah, to an extent as well, that it's kind of a bit of a catch-22, I guess, or maybe more so a downward spiral where you maybe lose a little bit of confidence, certainly when you're playing in the night games, worried about the contact lenses. So it's not actually necessarily about the surgery itself, I would assume. Largely it is about the confidence.
It just made me one less thing to worry about before a game, do you know what I mean? That was just something out of my mind then that I didn't have to really think about. So it definitely did play a part in, you know, me having such a good season last year.
I mean, you started the season with 4 clean sheets as well, so you must have thought, crikey, I've got a miracle product here. But I think it was 19 clean sheets in total. You equaled that with James Shea. Actually, we asked James Shea on the podcast what he did with his golden glove, and it's in his caravan down in, what's the name of that place?
Down in Kent somewhere.
Yeah, down
it?
In Kent. Yeah. I can't remember the name of the place in particular, but what did you do with yours?
Mine's right in front of me now in my room where I have my PlayStation and stuff. It's nice. Yeah, it's just sat below there with the League One play team of the year thingy as well. So yeah, just drop them sat there right in front of me.
Just drop that one in as well. Team of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, PFA team of the year, I think, as well.
Yeah,
that's heck of a season.
Yeah.
Do you know, again, we're gonna kinda go back and forth in this podcast, but do you wanna touch on that season in particular, because it was, and from a personal point of view, and again, you know, obviously I'll state this now, obviously I know you to a very good level, but it was a very, very interesting season, going that you were going into your last season with Barnsley in terms of your contract, 1 year left on your contract. You hadn't played the back end of the season before. Young Walton had obviously got in and played a few games ahead of you. So you were going into the season, and it was quite an uncertain time at the start of that particular season, not knowing obviously what the future would hold, whether you would be there after the year ended, not knowing if you'd even start the season.
Yeah, it was difficult because obviously coming off that season we got relegated. It was such an up and down season for me personally, and then obviously to be relegated was, you know, was a kick in the teeth right at the end. So, you know, I had to have a good, you know, look at myself over the summer, and the thing that I got out of it was just to start enjoying football again and just enjoying, you know, the day-to-day stuff and just working hard and being the best I could be. And then I kind of just thought to myself, whatever happens, happens. If Barnsley want rid of me or they want me to move on, fair enough, I'll kick on elsewhere. But it was lucky that the manager that come in, Daniel Stendhal, took a liking to me. I started the pre-season really well. I come back flying. And then it all just went from there then, and the confidence started to come back. And then, you know, the season that I had happened. So it was difficult. But as I said, the main thing for me was to try and just get back to enjoying football. And it was lucky that we had such a good team and we were winning games, which is always good. And it gives you the confidence to go on and do better and stuff like that. So that was the main point for me over that summer, just to get back to enjoying it. And you know, I love football. I love playing football. I love doing the stuff day in, day out of getting better and stuff like that. So yeah, that's what I wanted to do, just enjoy it again.
And at that point, you know, just about to go into the season, obviously there is, like you say, a little bit of uncertainty after the way the previous season had ended. But if you were to look then forward 12 months and you would have come second in the league, you would have captained the team to coming second in the league, you'd won the Golden Glove, you'd have made your debut for Wales, and you would have got a move to Stoke City. I mean, could you have believed that at that point?
I always knew I could do that in myself. It was just doing it. As you said, I probably couldn't believe, you know, the way it went, everything just fell into place and everything went right. But I guess that's down to the work I put in, and you know, you get out what you put in. But as you said, yeah, with the what happened at the end of the season, you know, the uncertainty of my time at Barnsley, maybe wanting to leave, you know, the club wanted me to go or whatever, to do what everything that you've just said, you know, captain the lads and, you know, get promotion. It was an unbelievable season, and yeah, I absolutely loved every minute of it. It was brilliant.
You mentioned Daniel Stendhal there as well, Adam. He's since been sacked by Barnsley. He's moved on. He's now the new Hearts coach. him coming in was quite pivotal for you, right? I know that he was quite an innovative manager, tried to change things up a bit and almost made you a bit more of a sweeper-keeper type of keeper.
Yeah, he did. That was one of my strengths anyway, so I think that was why he took a bit of a liking to me, because he was massive on that when he come in. He wanted, you know, because we played such a high press, he needed the goalkeeper to be high as well for anything in behind to come in, you know, sweep up. So that was quite lucky on my behalf, you know, because I found that was one of my strengths anyway. So yeah, as I said, it was nice that it kind of fell into place, and he kind of wanted that from me. But he also, not just that, there was other games, the other part of the game that he wanted me to do for the team, which I've never really had in the past. And as I said, over the year that we've worked with him and John Vaughan, you know, I got a load better at that, and kind of just gave me the belief that I could do different sides of the game. So yeah, it was great. I enjoyed my time working with Daniel.
And in terms of your game, you know, we talk obviously to a lot of different goalkeepers, lots of different types of goalkeepers. If you were to analyse your game in terms of where it's at now, and of course, no doubt you'd be working on certain areas and like all top goalkeepers looking to improve as much as you can. But if you were to analyse your game and almost put yourself in a particular box, a particular mould of a goalkeeper, how would you do that exactly?
I'd say I'm pretty well-rounded. I have obviously played a lot of games now. I know how to play football. I know how to play in goal. I've played over 200 games. So that side of it, for me, just kind of like touching up on everything. So the working week that we do is, you know, you work on your crosses and your shot stopping, your distribution and everything. If you were to, you know, to ask me to analyse myself, I'd just say a well-rounded goalkeeper and just try and be a calming influence on the lads and you know, and just be that like self-assured goalkeeper behind that I know the lads like to have.
Do you observe others, Adam? Do you look at other goalkeepers that are playing currently, that played in the past? We speak to a lot of goalkeepers who say they study old YouTube clips sometimes and see goalkeepers. Do you look at what other goalkeepers are doing in a bid to improve yourself as a goalkeeper?
Yeah, I watch, you know, a lot of Premier League games, the big dogs there, you know, Kasper Schmeichel, De Gea's and stuff like that, who are, you know, at the top of the game at the minute. And I think it all, obviously, it depends what kind of team you're in and stuff like that, and how teams want to play and what style of play that they have. But it's just good to be able to have a lot of different, you know, things in your armoury, whatever it's called. It's like, if a gaffer comes in, say we've got Michael O'Neill now in, and he wants to change the style of play, it's good to be able to just adapt to that really quick. So as a goalkeeper, as a footballer, I think everyone should be looking to improve and kind of go with the flow and you know, improve in different aspects of their game to adapt to whatever the manager needs. So, yeah, that's something that I definitely do look at.
There's a saying for that, isn't there, Rich? Continual, never-ending improvement.
Well, I mean, it means a lot to some people. Some people have it tattooed on
their
body. It means that much.
They put it in a really noticeable place for everyone to see, don't
they? There you go. Anyway.
Did you do that, by the way, Rich? Just quickly, did you watch other goalkeepers to improve your game?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. It used to be, for me, it was... I was a bit of a geek with all this kind of stuff, but it would be... when I'd watch football and analyse it, you'd almost want to take elements of different goalkeepers. So it would be, I try to think of a good example back in the day, but I was also a big fan of Iker Casillas because his stature was similar to mine. But then I'd watch a Fabian Barthez who had a certain style of how he threw a ball that I absolutely loved. It might then be with their feet. Certainly now the likes of an Edison, I guess you'd look. In a perfect world, you would take all these different elements. But if nothing else, you can watch them and kind of try and get an idea. You learn so much by watching a goalkeeper play.
Well, now, especially working with Adam Federici, who's known for his side volley, is one of the best in the game. So as soon as I come in, I said to him, listen, I'm going to get some tips off you on how to do that side volley because it's unbelievable. So again, working with people like that, and you get to learn from them as well, not just watching them, but also the goalkeepers you're working day in, day out, they might have strengths that are better than you at. So for me, I just try and take little bits from them as much as I can and just try and learn from them as well.
This was it when I remember you came into Brentford briefly, and at the time, obviously, I was signed at the club, and I was a little bit worried when you came in for those few days. So I was absolutely delighted when they didn't sign you. I'm not going to lie.
Nice.
Yeah.
What did you learn, Adam, by the way? What have you learned from that side volley in terms of technique? Because a lot of young goalkeepers listening to this, I know that side volley is just the thing that everybody wants to master now. So what have you taken from Federici?
Well, Fed's just, he said how he got so good at it. He used to do it over a shorter distance and kind of perfect that first before he went into a further distance. So just the technique of, you know, driving down into the ball to get the backspin on it, the throw to set it up and everything is, and it's obviously just the timing of the strike. And then he's just said he did that over a short distance and kind of just built it up. And he just practiced it, and I've been doing it every single day with him, just 5-10 minutes before and after training. We just hit a couple tours across the box, and that's probably the main thing. Just keep practicing it, and you'll get better.
Do you know, I'll always remember that. It was Sal Bibo was the coach at Reading, and that was one of the first times I saw it, because it was kind of a bit of people that used to do it back in the day when it was first came in. You almost thought people were a bit flash when they were doing it, like this continental side volley. And I always remember playing at Reading, and I was watching him and Sal Bibo do it back and forth to each other, and I literally stood there for about 5 minutes in amazement, because the trajectory he gets on it, he gets his hip really high, doesn't he? He gets his foot really high in order to get such a flat trajectory.
Yeah, he does. He is a flexible guy for 34 years old, so he's a master at it. He's unbelievable. As you said, the trajectory he gets, drops it right in. Right, head height all the way. It's unbelievable.
I think one of the first goalkeepers I saw do it was back in the early noughties. It was Matteo Serrani, who was at Ipswich for a little while. I remember seeing him doing it and thinking, that's new. I haven't seen that before. This is a bit of a random question, actually. In terms of conditioning and exercises around it, do you have to do anything extra for that because of the way that you're planting your legs so heavily to do a side volley as opposed to the way you'd normally half volley it or old school drop kick it?
I think probably the flexibility is probably the biggest one. To get your leg up, you know, hip height and above is probably the most important thing. You don't really need to be too strong to perfect it. It's just probably the flexibility, I think.
Which moves on quite nicely, because I want to talk to you about how you train and the additional work that you do. So, you know, everyone's got their own different things they like to do. For me, it was always a lot of plyometrics. I based my game, I suppose, largely on power and spring. So I knew that was something I needed to keep on top of. In terms of your training, obviously you do the technical work with your goalkeeper coach, but the stuff outside of that, do you do a lot of stuff in the gym, for instance?
Especially since I've moved to Stoke, it's been massive. Obviously not playing as well, you can get a lot more in. Yeah, we do a lot of leg strength work, upper body strength work. We do, you know, like the trap dead bar lift, a lot of squats. That's normally on a Tuesday that we do the leg work. And then on a Thursday, we do an upper body session. But yeah, it's been great since I've been at Stoke. I do feel a lot stronger. And then I did Pilates for 4 years when I was at Barnsley, because I had a reoccurring groin injury that kept coming back and I just couldn't get rid of it. So I just thought to myself, I need to do something to kind of counteract it. And touch wood, I haven't had a groin injury since. And I've been doing Pilates now for nearly 4.5 years. And it is nice to get away from the footballing world and do something different that can help your body and, you know, keep you strong and flexible. And I'm hoping it will, you know, keep me fit and strong for a number of years so I can play till I'm 40-odd.
Very nicely. Oh, great save by Davis to deny Sercombe.
This is the save that keeps Barnsley in front in this tie, Adam Davis. It's a wonderful reaction save.
Is that, like you said there, Adam, is that sometimes a positive of being out the game for a while? Of course, you're at Stoke this season, but it's been Jack Butland and Adam Federici playing the game so far this season. But being out of the game, does it give you an opportunity to actually step back and reflect on what you need to improve on and actually come back a better goalkeeper?
I think that's the only way you can look at it, because obviously I'm frustrated I'm not playing, but the only way to change that is to do the day-to-day stuff right and make sure that I'm, you know, I'm tip-top shape and I'm training as hard as I can and doing everything that I can to be as ready as possible for if I am called upon or there's an opportunity that comes up. So I think you need that mindset of, okay, I'm not playing, but what can I do now day to day to make sure I'm in the best shape I can be. And as I said, when that opportunity does come up, that you're ready, because I'm sure the people that, you know, don't play and they might sulk and, you know, mope about, but I think the mindset you need to have is just, you know, go in every day and just give it your all, do everything you can to as I say, for that opportunity that comes along.
Yeah, do you know what, just to add to that, because I think, again, we get a lot of young goalkeepers that listen in, and it's quite an interesting point, because people don't necessarily appreciate that if you're playing Saturday, Tuesday, which of course with Barnsley last season, there was weeks upon weeks where you'll be doing that. And of course, yeah, if that is the case, the focus is all about the game. You actually consider the amount of training, physical training that you can do, it's not that much. If anything, I actually used to put on weight when we'd have Saturday, Tuesday, because all I felt like I was doing was, really? Yeah, because you're just eating food, you're just pre-match, and you're not really training. So, you know, suddenly 4 or 5 weeks worth of not actually training and just playing games, I actually put on a little bit of weight. So I think the other end of the spectrum is where you're at now, where actually it doesn't matter if you turn up and you've got DOMS, you know, if you've got muscle soreness, it doesn't really matter because, as you say, look, at some point that chance will come, but you want to know when that chance comes, you are 5% stronger than you were the last time you played a game, or 5% quicker, or mentally that little bit more tuned in. So I guess there are positives to take, and you have to choose that mindset, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because it'll just eat away at you if you have a negative mindset about everything, because you go into that mindset, it's only going to make things a lot worse for you, because you'll just get yourself further away from the team. So, yeah, as you say, for anyone out there, any young kids who aren't playing at the minute, it's vital that you do everything you can to keep yourself in top shape, work on game, put, you know, part of your game that's not so good, and get better at things.
Yeah, and just to touch on your time now, so of course you did join Stoke in the summer, and it's fair to say, obviously, from a team's point of view, and of course you haven't played as yet, but it's not gone to plan yet, certainly for Nathan Jones, obviously moved on, and O'Neill now has taken charge. In terms of the club itself, I suppose I'm more interested in that and the structure. Obviously, they've been a top club for many, many years now. They've obviously... in terms of the training structure and the structure they've got in place, I'm guessing it's still Premier League. Is there anything that you've seen yourself going from the environment you had at Barnsley, when it was, I'm guessing, nowhere near in terms of the facilities and the actual training structure, to then coming to Stoke, where it's that much better, but things haven't gone right on the field? Is there anything that you've noticed?
No, it's really tough to put my finger on it. You know, there's a really good group of lads there. There's no bad eggs or anything like that. You know, the training that we do day in, day out, you can see that the quality's there. Mm. There's, you know, players that have, international players, there's players that have played in the Premier League, played in the Championship for a long, long time. So the quality's there. It's really strange. For me, I can't put my finger on why it's not happened. And as you say, it's one of them things that we've got to deal with as a team, really, and everyone's got to buy into to try and get us back to winning ways and climbing out the relegation zone, because it's such a big club, there's such a good fan base, and it's so frustrating because there's so much quality in the team, and it's just not happening on a Saturday. So it's tough to put my finger on. I couldn't really say what's going wrong at the minute.
And just a quick one on your situation, of course, signing there, I'm assuming you didn't sign as a number three, of course. So obviously you mentioned earlier you're frustrated not to be playing. Have you had to shift your mindset slightly to look at it as more of a long-term vision for you?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously when I signed, there was a lot of rumours that, and, you know, the hope was Jack was going to move on and then the shirt would be up for grabs. But that hasn't happened for whatever reason. So, yeah, my mindset now is I've signed a 3-year deal there. As I said before, it's just working day in, day out to improve, working with the goalie coach to get better every single day. And then when the opportunity does come, hopefully at Stoke, I'm ready to perform and come, you know, come in flying and do well. But it is tough because obviously I've gone from being at Barnsley for the last 5 years, playing most weeks. But, you know, there's days where you have a bit of a down day, but you get through them and just try your best to keep positive and just keep going, because you never know in football. Two weeks in football is a long time and things can change really quick. So for me, as I said, just the mindset is just to keep going and keep positive about things.
What can Ford conjure here? Well, he can force an excellent and important save out of Davis.
Save here by Adam Davis. He does get across, but it's such a strong wrist that he throws on the free kick from Ford.
Just to quickly rewind a little bit further to your formative years as a goalkeeper, you did start life with Everton. You left there in 2012 to go to Sheffield Wednesday, but your time with Everton and under David Moyes, I imagine it probably was, in terms of the goalkeepers there at the time as well, who did you work alongside?
Tim Howard was obviously the goalkeeper there, and there was Jan Mukka, and then Marcus Hanneman also came in for a year. I'm really lucky to work with Tim Howard. Obviously, at the time, he was one of the best goalkeepers in England. And working with Chris Woods, who was seen as one of the best goalkeeping coaches at the time as well. It was good for me kind of to learn my bread and butter kind of stuff from him. You know, just his work ethic, the way he did things. At the time, I didn't really appreciate it, but now looking back, it was, I probably do a lot of that stuff that he taught me as a youngster. So, yeah, I love my time at Everton. I was devastated when I got released by David Moyes, but it was probably the best thing that's ever happened to me, because at the time I was thinking, where do I go from here? But I probably wouldn't have been on this journey that I've been on over the last 7-8 years now if I was still at Everton maybe for a couple more years. So, as I say, at the time I was devastated, but it was definitely one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
Do you know what? The two things you said there are two sentences you often hear from most goalkeepers we interview, to be fair, that one, they probably didn't appreciate the advice they were getting at the time as a young goalkeeper, and if they could go back, they'd definitely take it on board. And two, that whilst they were devastated to be released from a club as a youngster, it was probably the best thing for them.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I wouldn't say I didn't appreciate the advice that Tim gave us, but I definitely use it a lot more now than when I did when I was 19, 20 years old, if you know what I mean.
And David Moyes as well is another name that seems to come up quite a lot on this podcast. Everybody always speaks extremely highly of David Moyes. I personally think his stock has kind of fallen in recent seasons, quite unfairly, I think, ever since that spell with Manchester United, of course. He's had his time with Sunderland and West Ham, of course, with Real Sociedad as well in La Liga. What was he like to work with for you? Andrew Lonergan sung his praises. I know that David Lucas worked with him as well. He said he was great. His attention to detail as a manager at the time was actually way ahead of his time when it came to analysis and new developments within goalkeeping and football.
For me, he just had such an aura about him. Like, if he walked in the room, you knew about it. He had such a presence of a man, and you could just feel like everyone looked up to him. Everyone wanted to, you know, Everton at the time were known for being a dogged team and, you know, running through the ground for each other, running through the walls for each other. So he kind of installed that through his work ethic. So you could see just from being in the building and just seeing him around, such a presence about him. You could see that all the lads just looked up to him so much and they'd run through the walls for him.
You did spend some time with Sheffield Wednesday as well. I have to ask you, Adam, because a certain Stephen Bywater, I believe, was at the club. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was, yeah. What a character he is.
Brilliant. What a character he is. In terms of him as a character, I mean, you said what a character he was. What was it about him that struck you?
He was just nuts. Absolutely crazy. Like, he was the definition of what goalkeepers are. Just crazy. But he was great with everyone. He's such a nice guy. Like, so nice to everyone. And then he just had this crazy side, which I think a lot of goalkeepers have. But yeah, he was great with me. Obviously, I was only 20, 21 at the time when I was at Sheffield Wednesday. So yeah, he was great with me. He was a top man.
Do you know what? It's funny because his name, it's like the legend that is Stephen Bywater. We did actually have him on the podcast and he was great value. Classic though, he was doing it from a balcony in Spain somewhere when
he was in New York.
My one, and I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. My one Stephen Bywater story was I was in the England under 21s and we were rooming together and I got there a bit late from memory and he was already in the room. So I've gone into the room and I always remember it was quite a big room. We had the two beds and then we had two sofas and two TVs. I was like, wow, they've really looked after us here. Like, you know, giving us all like our own separate TVs. It was only later that evening when we're sat watching our separate TVs that we get a knock on the door and it's one of the members of staff from the hotel. Excuse me, sir, we've had a complaint that you've stolen their lounge, you've stolen their settee and you've stolen their TV. He'd actually gone next door and nicked a TV and nicked a sofa so we could have two each. And I always remember talking to him about it. He's like, no, I just wanted to look after you. My roommate wanted to look after you.
Classic Stevie, that.
We have to talk about Wales, of course. You have represented your country, made your debut, a friendly win over Trinidad and Tobago. You came on for Danny Ward. Must have been a great experience for you.
Yeah, that was, you know, it was the pinnacle of football, international football. So, yeah, it was a massive moment for me and my family who all come down to to Wrexham to watch the game. You know, I'd been obviously been doing really well that season with Barnsley, and you know, a sniff that I might get a game. Obviously, Wayne's the number one at Wales, and Danny is at Leicester in the Premier League team. So, you know, for me being at Barnsley in a League One team to get a game, it was difficult. So, you know, the performances that I've been putting in, week out, it earned me that. And the gaffer told me a couple of days before that I was going to play the second half. So yeah, it was unbelievable feeling. Give me even more confidence to kick on with Barnsley towards the back end of the season.
There's a few names that I've got to ask you about, of course, because as part of that was, well, first and foremost, the manager, of course, Ryan Giggs, and then and Mr. Gareth Bale as well, who's in the same squad as you.
The gaffer's been great. He's done a fantastic job with the lads. He's bringing a lot of young lads, you know, through the ranks and give them an opportunity. You know, in the summer that we've, you know, just gone, we lost two games for the Euros, and it was looking doom and gloom, but he's managed to get it right, and you know, he's had a lot of doubters, and I think he's silenced a lot of them people. Yeah, so he's been great with me. He's a great guy, nice to talk to, he's got time for everyone. And the football that we've been playing has been fantastic. So, yeah, it's been a joy, you know, going away with them.
Does he get involved in training? Because often you hear stories about ex-players. Gianfranco Zola's been mentioned a lot on this. You hear about Pep Guardiola getting involved in training and they're a class above everybody else. Does he get involved, Giggs?
No, he doesn't. No, he leaves it to us. They have little staff games, little play two-touch and stuff together. But no, you know, when we're doing our work, it's all business and, you know, everything's done properly, so yeah, he doesn't get involved.
And I've got to ask you about Gareth Bale. To face a Gareth Bale shot, for me, thinking about it now, is probably one of my biggest nightmares. He's got that strike, hasn't he, where the ball just goes all over the place. I'm guessing you faced a few of them in training.
Oh, yeah. He can't half hit a ball. It's frightening. Yeah. It's a different level, how hard he can hit the ball and the movement he gets on it. Obviously, when I first went, I was just like bamboozled a little bit, like, wow, what am I meant to do with that? How am I meant to get in the way of that kind of thing? But as the trips have gone on and you get used to it a little bit more, you actually make a couple of saves, which is nice. But yeah, he can't half hit a ball. It's frightening how much movement he gets on it.
Yeah, what's he like as a lad?
Yeah, he's really nice, yeah. Quite quiet. He's got his little group. Wales, Wayne and you know, Joe Levy, but he's not been involved recently, but he's quite quiet, he's quite silly and makes a lot of jokes and stuff like that. He's sound.
And I suppose it leads on quite nicely in terms of your aspirations moving forward, of course, with your club, no doubt you've set goals in terms of what you want to do with Stoke, but with Wales as well, the fact that you have been in so many squads now and you have got the Euros to look forward to, have you set like specific targets for yourself, or are you just seeing how it plays out?
Well, I think, you know, to be in that Wales team, you need to be playing week in, week out for your club, which is what I try and concentrate on the most. Because I think if you do well for your club, you know, and you're involved in the international setup, I think that will just take care of itself. Obviously, I'd love to, you know, get a number of caps for Wales and play for them and stuff. But my day in, day out kind of stuff will take care of that. And if I do that properly, I'm sure that, you know, I'll get my just reward. So, yeah, so for me, just main goal is day in, day out, do the best I can, improve, get better, and then see where it takes me.
Great stuff. And the last question, we ask this to everybody who comes on the podcast, which is, Adam Davies, what has goalkeeping given you?
It's given me a drive to improve myself. It's given me, that's what I do, you know, every morning, get out of bed to go and be a goalkeeper and improve. Yeah, it's giving me drive.
Adam Davies, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, guys.
Bradshaw, was he fouled by Brownhill? Advantage play, Chambers! Oh, Davies produces another save.
Second very, very good save he's pulled off today, Adam Davies.
Interesting chat, that one, because this is a goalkeeper who, and we spoke about it in the podcast, moved to Stoke for what we thought was going to be a big move for him, what he thought was going to be a big move for him. It hasn't quite materialised. Since recording, he's actually made his first appearance against Brentford in the FA Cup. Naturally, his first game, a little bit of ring rust, made some good saves, but potentially was at fault for the goal that Emiliano Marcondes scored straight from a free kick. But it's a funny situation.
It is. I mean, he went to the club fully expecting to play, truth be told. And I think that it hasn't quite materialised as he would have wanted to this point. I mean, he touched on the fact that when he's not playing, where he's got a really good mindset and where I give him a lot of credit is that he realises that when he's not playing, he can work on other areas of his game. And I think that's key. And it's such a message that I really want to give to younger goalkeepers is that even if you're not playing week in, week out, you can still improve. Because ultimately, for you to maximise your potential, you need to be as strong as you can, as quick as you can, technically as astute as you can be. Now, you can work on all of that in training. You can work on a lot of that in your spare time. You can do your tactical awareness by watching games of football, from learning from top coaches out there. Go and find what you need to find in order to improve yourself. And I think that with the mentality that Adam Davis has got, he at some point will be given his chance. I think when he is given his chance, we will see an even better goalkeeper than the one that helped Barnsley get promoted.
It is so important, isn't it? Because it would be quite easy to actually sulk and be like, I want to play football.
Some do. Look, some do. And I think that ultimately you only spite yourself. Now, regardless whether you've got issues with the manager or issues with staff, ultimately, it's only going to spite you if you allow those issues, those external factors, to then allow it to impact your progress and impact your development. Because I go back to my point, look, if you believe that the cream rises to the top, well, then how can you improve what you're doing? And actually, when you're not playing, there's certain work that you can do that you can't necessarily do when you play. So it might be physical that you, it doesn't matter if you've got DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, whatever it's called.
Yes.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if you've got that every day, because actually, like when you're not playing, it's a perfect time to increase your strength by 10%. And then when suddenly you are back in the team, imagine the feeling you'll get knowing that you've taken yourself physically to the next level, and it's going to allow you to make even better saves than you made before. So again, I love his mindset. There's a reason that he's done as well as he has. He had some lows, he's had some tough times, but the fact that he continually bounces back and he's got this mindset of continual development, continual improvement, I think for me, that's the reason that he will end up playing a lot of games for Stoke City, and he'll end up being their number one very soon.
The fact that Jack Butland has come back into the reckoning and is playing relatively well as of recording, he made a very good performance against West Brom in a big win for Stoke City at the Hawthorns. And that game that Davies played against Brentford, will that affect Michael O'Neill's decision-making at all?
No, look, I think, and I was at the game against Brentford, and generally very, very good, very solid in everything he did. The goal that he conceded, it's one of them that's whipped to the far post, and it's an excellent free kick in fairness. He just took half a step forward, which in the end meant that he wasn't able to quite get back. So look, it's a minor error really, and certainly Michael O'Neill came out afterwards and was very supportive of him, and obviously is very aware of what he's done in training and what he's done with the national team and so on and so forth. So no, that'll have very little impact. You're right, Jack Butland has done very well recently. There is the possibility that he might move on in this window, again, as of recording. If not, good chance it'll move on in the summer, because I still think he is one of the top English goalkeepers. And I think we'll see a resurgence for Jack Butland as well. So this is where, from Adam's point of view, and obviously when we talk, it's a case of patience right now. As much as that's tough, and as much as he'd walk into half of the teams, if not the majority of the teams in the Championship, I'm sure he would. But for now, just be patient. Do you know what? There are other things you can focus on to make sure that when you come back, you're stronger. And I think he's bought into that now, which is credit to him. And again, whether it's back end of this season, whether it's the start of next season, I think at some point he will be number one, and I'm excited to see that.
And the laser eye surgery.
Yeah.
What a story that is. And again, real credit to him. A bit like you. I'd imagine this was the kind of thing that you would have done. I mean, you said that you did. You bought some Nike contact lenses, which is fantastic, by the way. But it's proactive.
Well, it is. I mean, look, it's something that, by the way, and there's other goalkeepers that will suffer with this. You know, there's so many things that can impact your game. Now, if, you know, your eyes aren't quite what they were, then there are things you can do. And I remember speaking to him at the time, because he was wearing contact lenses in games. And for those that wear contact lenses, trying to look at the floodlights is quite tough. You know, you imagine it's a wet, windy night and you're looking up into the floodlights. It is quite tough. So, you know, he said openly that by getting this done, it's allowed him to see that much clearer. Now, for a goalkeeper, that's kind of big, you know, and I think that he's man enough, big enough to let people know as well, because I know a lot of people keep stuff like this under wraps, but you know, it's true. Like, it's something that he had, and he was able to get the surgery, and now he's in a really good place with his eyes. And I think there was a slight difference as well, and he's one that he would never make an excuse. That's what I'd say about Adam as well. He'd never ever make an excuse. So even when he was having a game or two that maybe didn't go as well as he'd wanted them to go at the back end of the season before when Barnsley got relegated, he never said anything. He just went and got the stuff done in the summer, comes back, captain, promotion, top of League One, League One team of the year, does everything. And at the end of that season, he then lets a few people know, oh, by the way, I actually had that done last summer. There were a few people at the time that it added up, because the games where he found a little bit tougher were night games. So, look, I don't want to make excuses for him, but the one or two performances that maybe weren't quite up to scratch, you could argue that, of course, if you can't see, then it's going to be a little bit more difficult to play a good game of football.
Okay, Richard. Danke.
Dankeschön.
get the reference?
I did. German. Well done. Clever. Yeah.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with Goalkeepers 365, GK Icon and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.